Hey, this is Gary from Careless Whispered, and you are tuned in to the Creepy Crap Podcast.
Why, hello there, and welcome.
You're listening to the Creepy Crap Podcast. It's quick, simple, and Australian. Now, if you want to follow along on the socials, you can get the show on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Discord, all at one word at the Creepy Crap Podcast. Or we could share film histories on Letterboxd at the Creepy Crap Pod. And if you enjoy the podcast today, why not show some love with a 5-star review on whatever app you listen to this with? All right, now let's start one of Australia's favourite horror podcasts, the Creepy Crap Podcast. And be warned that this episode will most likely contain swearing, spoilers, and adult themes. Welcome, Creepy Crapsters, to another episode of the Creepy Crap Podcast. My name's Danny Boy, and this is a special guest episode. I'm joined with a great guy. His name is Gary, and he's from the Careless Whispod Podcast. Thank you so much, Gary, for coming on, and let's talk about this great movie. How you been?
Hey, that's me. Wait, I got to fire my agent. I thought it was Danny Boy, the comedian, B-H-O.
Yeah, everyone always assumes that. That's how I get people on.
Lure them in. I got to try that. I better change my name, Billie Eilish with a Y on the end or something.
I'm a little less Indian than he is. Moving on.
I already listened, so I already know these answers, but can you tell everyone else what your podcast is about and how come you chose Careless Whisperer as the name of the podcast? Great song, by the way, but yeah, very curious. Why did you choose that? And what's the podcast about? Are you able to kill their curiosity?
Well, when we first started, it was about, at the time, my co-host Jeremy and I were hosting a heavy metal podcast. And outside of that, we had been sharing a lot of really cheesy pop music from the 70s and 80s that we both really loved. I was like, do you want to do a little offshoot podcast where we talk about this stuff? Because in the metal scene, it's all about metal cred, you know, too cool for school.
George Michael's not going to win you any points.
Exactly. Wrote a list of names, and I love puns. We narrowed it down to two names, which was Careless Whispod and Call Us Owl, I think was the other one, after the Paul Simon song, yeah. You Can Call Me Owl. And we're going to introduce ourselves each episode as I'm Owl and this is Owl. I'm kind of glad we dropped that one.
Yeah, that'd be confusing. Because no one will know your real names. Like, oh, they're both called Alan. You're like, oh, no, neither.
With that dedicated to a joke that we would have just stuck with it.
Yeah, legally change your names. Yeah, I feel like that's 100% why I followed the second I saw it. I was like, Careless Whispod. I'm like, that is hilarious. And what is the podcast about? What are you guys doing for the listeners who don't know you?
So we started off just kind of focusing on a single song at a time, usually pop songs from the 70s and 80s, mostly 80s. So things like Hall & Oates, Barry White, Billy Joel, all that kind of stuff. And we've kind of branched out a bit in terms of genre. We love this pop music. We love metal. But we also, there's a whole bunch of other stuff. We're both very eclectic listeners. So we listen to a lot of jazz and world music and soul music, funk, all this kind of stuff, industrial, pop punk. It's just an excuse for us to get together and talk about all this music that we're learning about, listening to, and enjoying.
It sounds like a radio show now, almost.
Yeah.
Where you guys have a little chat and then it's like, on to the next song.
We don't know what's going to happen on the show until we record it. We'll know the first song that's being played. We just kind of improvise and throw songs back and forth.
Yeah, whatever the mood takes you.
That kind of dictates the direction of the podcast. And you'll hear us sometimes coming up with a theme for the episode as it's happening. We're enjoying it. And hopefully listeners will enjoy it as well.
It's like hearing the creative process behind some things. And you guys, yeah, quite unique to anything else I listen to. That's why I was like, I really want to ask you about this for a while. But I've asked, we've talked about it. Let's get on to the movie, I reckon, hey?
Let's do it. Thank you for your kind words.
You're welcome. So yeah, we've chosen Hounds of Love. That's right. The movie. It is a great movie. The horror aspect. Such a funny one. But it's like, it's got Stephen Curry in it, Emma Booth, Susie Porter, and you got one or two other familiar faces.
Did you rewatch it before this?
Oh yeah, I've seen it before, yeah. I've seen it like twice before. I had it on DVD for ages.
It's really funny because I watched it a few years back. I think it was during the lockdown. I just had this memory of the movie being very intense, very graphic, but a lot of more graphic scenes they cut away from.
I do really understand what you're talking about, because I thought at one point, I thought you see her naked, like Vicky, and they have sex, and it's only kind of as he's about to do something, the door shuts. Like that Mandela effect in your mind, you're like, I swear they had sex. Never.
It's amazing how they do that without showing you the graphic details. They cut away from a lot of everything.
The start was like that. Did you feel where it was all you can kind of see is like the 70, 80s, whatever time it's set in, them like in a house, you know, going about their business. There's two shots where you see one hand, literally just sort of a bloody hand with tight, and then like the box with the dildo in it, and you drive into the forest. If you didn't see the bloody hand, oh, okay, they're just building up. It's just a family going about their business. Oh, made breakfast for you, doll, or whatever like this. And you kind of two little scenes or three scenes, and it just sets this tone of there's something bad going on here without seeing anything.
In storytelling, like they talk about show, don't tell, rather than big scenes full of exposition where people are just explaining the world that the movie's set in, they just show a board on the window, the locks on the doors. Even in the very opening scene where John and Evie are sitting in their car watching that netball game.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Forgot about that part.
Slow motion, provocative angles of people's bodies, like just from the side, focusing on the breath, the back of the knees and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because it's not standard. It's really not asses and boobs or anything. Yeah, it is a weird curve of a leg or something. It's almost like his point of view of what he finds attractive.
Yeah, 100%. Without using any words, they got across everything that you needed to know about this couple.
Like you said, I didn't even factor in that netball scene, and like the board itself's like, this is weird. But yeah, like he pulls up, oh love, we're going this way, you want to ride or whatever, she says nah, oh yeah, it's hot. You're like, oh yeah, I'll just jump in. You never see that girl ever again. Everything after you watch everything else later on, you're like, oh, okay, that girl 100% was the victim. And you don't see anything else either when they go to the forest. It's just him grabbing a shovel or something, or like digging like once or twice. That is that girl for sure. Half that netball team's probably in that forest now.
When Vicky's mom goes to the police station later, they've got all the missing girls on the notice 100% board.
100% all these victims, you reckon?
I reckon there's a good chunk of them on that notice board there, which I thought was a great touch as well.
Yeah, they're just subtle little references in the background that just make it so much more unsettling if you're keeping a good eye on things.
So brilliantly done.
Yeah, so it's pretty weird seeing Stephen Curry in this role anyway, where you've seen him like you grow up. But does it make the whole Dale dug a hole thing from the castle so much more disturbing now?
That's a very good point.
It is strange seeing him like this, where he's just like, he looks like he's so thin and gaunt and stuff. Like, did you ever watch The Nugget? He's like a lot bigger and just red hair and everything else. Such a contrast in characters. Dale, what are you doing, mate? What happened?
I was going to ask you about this. An actor who's primarily a comedic actor doing psychologically disturbing as
it's honestly as one of my favorite things ever. I've mentioned it before, but I love it so much. Like that movie Becky, where it's Kevin James, who King of Queens or whatever he's in. I don't like that sort of shit. Bumbling fool in every movie. And then you see him, he's like a skinhead leader of the prison gang in this movie, and he's violent and killing everyone and all this shit. And I don't think he's grown his hair back since. He's just shaved his head down. He's going that Michael Chiklis route, I think his name is. Idiot in all these sitcoms and all this sort of shit. And then he does The Shield. And then he's just now he's like the fucking tough guy and everything.
I love The Shield.
How much did he go from being like an idiot to like suddenly being like, now he's this tough guy. He's got all this credit because he just shaved his head and he's serious in one movie. I love it. But yeah, do you like it?
I think it's great. Like we were talking about changing up the format of Careless Whisper and just like changing the way we do things, keeping it fresh. And yeah, Stephen Curry nailed it. He had that real air about him of like psychopath or a sociopath that doesn't really...
0 to 100 change.
Exactly. Doesn't really seem to register other people's emotions or that they're real almost. Right towards the end when Vicky's mum is yelling out for Vicky and he's standing at the door watching them, and he's just got that smile on his face and it's like, man, he's loving this.
I hate repetition. If someone's yelling out shit, even if it's like, it's 100% justified why she's doing it. You can see the neighbors all like, oh, fuck this, like walk away, and they're all hiding away. This lady's crazy. It's because she's like, she's somewhere here. I got the letter. And you're like, there's a point where you're just like, oh, shut up. Like you were hoping like she's going to yell in the street and a car hits her or something, just to be like, oh, please put this lady silent. Like, I hate this. Would you have ever worked that letter out? Someone could have sent me 50 letters in a row and I don't reckon I would have have ever gone, oh, you know what? I'm going to circle every X amount of letters and then that's the real message. Who the fuck thinks of this? Like, when does this ever become a thing someone learns?
I noticed that when she wrote the letter that some of the letters were capital and some weren't.
Oh, is that the code, was it?
I think that's what it was. Okay. I think they established maybe early on that the boyfriend and her used that to secretly communicate with
each other. Yeah, I thought there was maybe something that when he like writes an essay for or whatever else, like he's like, oh, I do this. But I was just like, under pressure, like you're basically like, these people are going to assault me and kill me or whatever else. Oh, you know what? I'll just do my little secret code here. Because it's like, fair enough, you would do it. Like, it makes sense for the movie to do it. So realistically, the parents are never going to find you there unless we're somehow friends anyway. And they're just like, oh, yeah, I got your daughter in the back or whatever. But it was just lucky that out of all the letters they steal as well, that just happened to be the neighbor's one. It could have been anywhere else. They would have never found him. It would have been that apartment block they steal letters from. They would have just been like yelling out to no one. Like, there's no fucking Vicky here. Like, what are you? Shut up. We don't have your daughter.
True. I like how they established that they've been stealing mail from around the place in order to get money from the Christmas cards. This might be one of my favorite Christmas movies.
I was literally going to ask you that. Like, that's my first question on my paper was, would you consider this a Christmas movie? And I'm guessing
Die Hard. I think,
hey, kids, gather around. We've got another one. Don't ruin Christmas for everyone. He is a psycho, though. Like you were saying, like, if we go back to that point for a sec, he's so unpredictable. Like, it must be so hard when you're a powder keg like that, where no matter what you're doing, like, he's always on edge and paranoid about what's happening. Maybe, you know, when he first gets Vicky, she's all tied up and crying, and then she basically like gives him head in front of her. I feel like the sexual part's not even about her doing it, it's because he's doing it in front of her. I feel like he's only looking at
her, watching her,
you know, you're next. It doesn't seem like Evie factors into the actual arousal part of that at all. And then later on she's trying so desperately to be like she's almost jealous of this Vicky for getting the attention now, like grabbing him, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing, like back off. And she's like, no, just do me now, and all this sort of stuff, as if like he has a day he does it and that's it. And she's trying to push it, like, just do me now, and then just hits her. You just totally never know what he's going to do. It must be so crazy to live with him.
It also seemed weird how calm he was in certain situations where any kind of regular person would have been angry or really flustered, panicking. He was very measured. A lot of things didn't really affect him.
Only seems to get annoyed by shit on the floor. Do you reckon there's an OCD element to him? They focus on them shoes constantly being put directly in that one spot every time.
They could even show him like trimming his mustache, how just immaculate and neat everything was.
When she poos herself, freaks out. But yeah, it made me think that there's some sort of element of, he gets so angry every time. It's the first time it happens. And that's what he said when he kicks the dog, is because he sees it again. And that's the thing he freaks out about. Not that the girl's trying to escape or that like he's losing Evie a little bit and guy wants money. He's going to come and bash him up if he doesn't get it. He's got all these elements there where the neighbor's like, I'm calling the police. I know I heard screaming and all. There's all these things, like the world is falling apart pretty quickly from the start when we start watching them. And that's one of the only things that gets him really angry. I love that one point as well, though, where like he runs away. He runs through. She's clearly seen him, and then he's in bed like, I just saw you. Why is he so scared? Like, that was a good question I was going to ask you. It was like, out of someone who has all this control, why is he scared that doing anything without her is like the thing he's scared about being caught about? You feel like he wouldn't give a shit. Did you have a thought on that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't really think of that. That's a really astute observation. I think maybe it makes it easier for him if she's happy. It just makes him more pliable. She's such a good accomplice to what he wants and what he needs, that he needs to keep her on side. That's the only thing I can really
That's a pretty valid point. I could see that, where it's if she doesn't believe if his one thing is that he won't do the victims when she's not there, and he breaks that, she's got no trust in him and then loses faith in anything else he does, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's a delicate balance.
And Vicky can see straight away, like, I mean, it's not like a secret in the movie. She's so vulnerable. She's like basically manipulating her the entire movie. Every time, why do you let him do that? I know what you're doing. It's working, but I hate it.
That's a great point. This was in my notes. From the beginning, you can kind of see she understands the dynamic of the relationship pretty early on.
Instantly.
She can see, which is what I liked about that Vicky character, is she wasn't just a victim in a slasher movie, running around screaming, running upstairs when she should be running out the door, all this kind of stuff. She's really smart.
Waiting for her moments and stuff like that.
Exactly. It kind of makes it feel a little bit more realistic because she seems like a little bit of a rebellious kid. She's sneaking out to go to the party at the beginning, you know?
She's got street and smarts. Yeah, like, good point. Yeah. She knew when to leave the house at that point, put a whole bunch of pillows in the bed, strategic about most of her moves. So this works for her trying to escape as well.
When the couple pick her up, you see John and Evie in the car. She's out on the street in the suburb that seems pretty rough, kind of suburb.
I feel like that other car is what gets her in that car.
She sees the baby seat. She sees this couple that seem, you know, fairly innocuous and nice. And you can see her mind going, well, they've got a kid. They seem pretty normal.
Yeah.
And then she hears the hoons around in the neighborhood. And she's like, yeah, I can get in their car. I'm safe.
But that must be the advantage for the serial killer couple as well, though, right? You see them and you're like, wait, if it was a guy going, oh, love, you want to drive? You're like, never in a million years would you get in the car. If it was just a lady going, you shouldn't be on the street, this isn't safe, like, she'd probably way better chance for a female to like go in there, especially when, oh, it's a woman, what would they do, like, I'm safe sort of thing. Where you see the couple and you're not going to think, it's such a common thing that people would be worried. Yeah. And they play that little dynamic of her going, oh, come on, I'll get you tenner, I'll get it nice cheap, and he goes, if she doesn't want it, don't worry. And all, like, he's playing it off, I'm being the one who's like, nah, we look weird to her. And she's like, yeah, that's what I'm actually thinking. But then she's like, nah, leave it. And she goes, oh, it's up to you. And then, yeah, kind of makes her feel like she's making the decision.
I love how deceptive Evie is too. Like, she just knows what to say to kind of make the situation seem like, you feel like she's a victim of John as well. But then these moments where she's very deceptive and very brutal, knows the right things to say to cut Vicky down, make her kind of lose confidence, is almost just as bad as John.
Because there's a point, even when, like, she washes her, she's all like kind of nice. So you kind of, oh, maybe she's, Vicky's taken on like her as a daughter role or whatever else. But then she's at one point, she says something to her and she can tell she's in her head. And she's like, all right, well, get ready for round two later on. And like, just that little comment as she's about to leave the room. And she's just like, oh, fuck, nothing I've said is helping. They're going to come back in and it's going to be a nightmare again. Like, he's not even in the room for any of this.
Even just holding the knife, saying, I'm not going to need to use this, am I? Takes Vicky out to clean her up after she's soiled the bed.
At the beginning, you said, oh, I don't need the knife in that. And she goes outside, stands behind the wardrobe, and then you can hear her like rattling the chains like she's trying to get out. Little shit. That was her chance to be like, okay, I can trust her. And instantly she's like, she's trying to escape. It's like, I can't trust her. She's dead to us. I feel like that moment, within seconds, of I've made my mind up. We can't have this girl. Because the other question I was going to ask you is, are they keeping her for a ransom, or they're just fucking with parents at this point? Like, is the letters just to upset the parents? Why are they doing this, do you reckon?
It's definitely not for money. Evie makes her, Vicky, write the note. Vicky knows straight away that this isn't for a ransom. This is to make it look like I left of my own accord so they don't come looking for me. They know that there's no hope for her. There's not going to be any ransom, any escape. Just going to use her for John's fulfillment and then dispose of her.
Yeah, that's pretty much the vibe I got. They could benefit by doing this. No, we're going to get caught if we do this. We have to kill them. But yeah, it's literally just like, oh, let's get John a girl for a couple weeks and then just get rid of her. And you're like, they're just doing it purely for killing.
It just kind of alludes to how many times they've done this before, because they're so practiced at it.
It does seem that way. They're good at it in certain aspects, but then it's also like the neighbor's like, there's all this screaming constantly. It's like the wooden board isn't soundproof. It doesn't sound like they've done a whole lot otherwise to do anything about stopping anyone reporting them. You're going to get caught at some point. You're stealing mail constantly. You're doing all these things. Like, you got drug dealers who know where you live are coming to your house. That guy's only got to drag him out the front and have a fight. They call the police. What are you doing? I've got to have a look around the house. It seems like they're not focusing on anything else, but we got to keep this girl here. That's it. Like, if she gets out, we're dead. But otherwise, we don't care. They've lost kids before. We feel like, wouldn't someone have to be doing checkups on them at some? There's so much for them to be caught, and they just seem quite reckless.
Because they established that the neighborhood is so bad, when Vicky's mom goes to the cops don't give a fuck. They're like, ah, she just ran away.
Yeah, we'll look into it on Monday or something.
Evie also says to that neighbor that she's got shit on him.
He steals videos or VCRs or something. We're going to do this until we get caught, whatever happens. Like, we'll kill ourselves or get shot or something. Like, we're going out in a blaze of glory here. We'll just do it until we get caught.
Because they've done it so many times, because they've gotten away with it so many times, it seems. They've got this confidence that they'll just continue to get away with it.
Yeah, 100%. Maybe. We're too good at this now.
It's cool that you mentioned that scene where she tries to escape. That's probably my favorite scene. Fakes him out with getting the window open and makes it look like she'd escaped out the window.
It's only because he sees the dog where he's, she did not get out of here. Yeah. Why would the dog still be at the window if she got out?
Yeah, exactly. That's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
But also saying that with it, she actually does get out because she like kills John at the end and everything. I won't kill Vicky even if she has a million chances to. He's about to kill her. No, I actually feel bad for this girl. I'm going to do it. And then she's standing there with a knife as if like, I'm going to kill you. You've made it around the side of the house and her parents are like outside in the street and everything. But then also she doesn't do anything. What do you reckon Evie's fate was? Do you reckon Evie killed herself after that?
Kind of liked how they left it ambiguous like that. Could be either way. Personally, I kind of feel like she just waited there for the cops to come get her.
She's just giving up. She's like, I got nothing else.
It seems like they left it open for the viewer to interpret. That makes me think it's towards the end when Evie stabs John. That's the only time you ever see the violence.
It's apart from some choking, there's nothing else really. Like a few slaps, but it almost like even when he slaps her, it's, you don't see it directly. You don't see the dog either. Like, it's a good point. Literally the knife's the only time.
Yeah. I just thought that kind of gave a bit more gravitas to that moment, kind of reclaiming her power that John had kind of taken away from her.
Yeah. And letting Vicky go at the end is almost like the last fuck you to John, even though he's dead. And she's done the complete opposite, is how I sort of saw it. It was just go and have the life I'm not going to enjoy. Like, we fucked it up, obviously. Like, you're going to be traumatized probably forever, but you can live now. Everything past this point, you can live and enjoy your life. She might be waiting for the cops. Fuck it, I deserve it. I'm not going to see my kids anymore. I don't have a husband. I don't have a dog. I don't have nothing. I'm never going to be able to live in this house. I don't work. I can't steal postcards forever. And how much money are you going to get after Christmas? There's all these things where she's like, my life is gone. He's destroyed it. I let him. Yeah, just.
You might be able to have one.
Yeah, have the life I'm not going to have. There you go. Down the street. That's your new life down there. Mine ends here.
All right. I feel like we've talked a fair bit about the movie. Feel free to bring up your final thoughts or whatever after this. I've got one final question before we like sort of wrap it up. What made you choose Hounds of Love? Why this movie?
Why did I choose it? Because you were talking about, I think on your Instagram, you were talking about the loved ones.
Yeah, that and was the first one I did this year.
The vibe that carried on from Hounds of Love and the vibe that I kind of got from the loved ones met in the middle. And so I had a little bit of a echo of each movie as I was watching them. So I just kind of brought it up because
I'm glad you did. When you said that, I was like, oh my God, yes. I think I was on Night Shift maybe and I was reading through the comments and it was like, there's millions or something. It's like, I saw that and it was Hounds of Love is the best. I'm like, we should do that. That is amazing. People are like, oh, there's not that many Australian movies. I'm like, there is. Scratch it a little bit deeper under the surface and there's tons of them.
What it really put me in mind of when I was watching it was Snowtown, actually.
Oh God, yeah. A good movie. It's messed up. That's a little on the less is more side as well with the violence. Except for some scenes, sadly.
Stylistically, they're very similar. Hounds of Love knew a little bit more when to turn the camera away.
I think that was true. When the brother wants to assault his other brother, get rid of the camera now. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, it's a very unsettling. It's just worse when you're like, oh, that was real. I know what movie you're doing next.
Interpretation. Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Stay tuned for Snowtown.
You know, I'm on Careless Whisper. We talk about music a lot. So I just wanted to mention the music that the film was based in. So it was obviously the 80s and they had stuff. What was in the Joy Division at the very end? Oh, yeah. And Knights in White Satin, Shivers by Boys Next Door. Sparse use of music was really clever. Wasn't too overbearing, but it helped set the scene. Was wondering if you had any thoughts on the musical side of the film.
I didn't, to be honest. For me, I'm like, there was no bangers in this. It was no sing-along moments or anything. But with the music for you, like, you obviously have a much deeper appreciation for music. I haven't listened to anything new for 20 years. When you listen to a song and then you see it in a movie, movie, like Casey Chambers, just for example, with The Loved Ones. It's pretty hard to watch The Loved Ones and now see I'm Not Pretty Enough and not think of some messed up scene from that, like multiple scenes where it's played a few times in the movie. And then suddenly you see it in a movie where the song's playing just as he's about to shut the door and assault them or something like that. And you're like, now I can't see it. Like, do you have those like embedded songs in your memory from fucked up scenes in movies, or can you still distance them? Or is there certain ones that have you got like maybe a go-to song that you can't get out of your head because of a movie? Is there a song that you're like traumatized by now thanks to a movie?
That's a good question. I don't know if traumatized. For me, a lot of the Tarantino music from Tarantino movies really sticks with me.
Reservoir Dogs one, where it's like it's hard to get that song out.
Stuck in the Middle of You. Yeah. A lot of the stuff from Pulp Fiction. There's definitely instances where music really sticks with you because of certain scenes in a movie. I think with this one, I'm not going to soon forget Knights in White Satin playing, coming to the big crescendo with the singer saying, "I love you." Stephen Curry being filleted at the same time. That's probably going to stick for a little.
All right, Gary, I feel like we've talked about the movie a fair bit, so let's find out what you really thought about it. Let's do some rating. Now it's time for the movie rating. There's four parts with a max score out of 5 per section, adding up to a potential total score out of 20. Part 1 is characters. Was it relatable? Was it fun? Was it annoying? Part 2 is the plot. Was it plausible? Enjoyable? Rubbish. Part 3 is the quality. Was it good effects? Did it look good? And part 4 is the vibe. What was the feeling once it finished? So that's the four sections. Now let's find out the results. So let's start off with part 1, which is characters. Were they relatable? Were they fun, annoying? Out of 5, what did you give the movie for characters?
Out of 5, I'd give that a 5, just because the characters were the movie. If you look at plot, the plot is very simple, but it's the interplay between the different characters where the real substance of the movie comes from. So like I mentioned earlier, Vicky being the smart captive, I thought was great. Not like a slasher film where you're like, why are they just being hysterical? Yeah. And I just found the character of Evie really fascinating, even more so than the character of John. I thought Evie, just the psychology behind her character was really clever, well observed from the real stories, because you know I've heard a few true crime podcasts about killer couples.
Are they considered swingers
with that character? I think
that's messed up. All right, so part 2 is the plot. Out of 5, obviously, was it plausible, enjoyable? Was it rubbish? What'd you give the plot?
The plot was good. I'd give it a 4, only because, like I just said, it was kind of secondary to the psychological, the characters kind of thing. The plot was almost like the MacGuffin of the movie. I'll give that a 4 because it was still a good plot.
Part 3 is the quality. Good effects. Did it look good?
I think it did look good. You could tell it was very low budget. There wasn't a whole bunch. There wasn't a whole lot in the way of effects, I think. It was just a simple story. There weren't a huge list of characters. And I think the simplicity of the story helped, keep the budget down. Something that I really enjoyed was that big wide shot of the house. You see Vicky's mum going to bed, but you can also see Vicky, jumping out the window to the
windows
party.
Outside, sort of thing.
I really liked that. And Vicky's mum used a rotary phone at one point, I noticed as well. So it was, just little touches like that. But even though it was a seemingly low budget, they did really well with what they had on hand. Yeah, I'd probably give that a 5.
Is this high scores? And then part 4, the vibe. What was the vibe once it finished for you?
I think the first time I watched it really stuck with me. And the second time I thought it would maybe lose a little bit of that. But no, I think this is one that I'm going to be thinking about for a while. Just
there's some deep insights on this as well. It was good. Yeah, like you said, like low budget, not given a lot, but they've done so much with it.
So I'd have to give Vibe a 5 as well. It just kind of it touches through on the similar aspects of the look of it. So
That is a total of beep, boop, beep, boop. I don't have any sound effects. Do you have a calculator sound effect?
I thought that was an actual calculator. That's how good your Foley work was.
Thanks, Michael Winslow, apprentice.
Yeah, your
total score is 19 out of 20 for Hounds of Love.
Oh, awesome.
That is high praise.
I really, really like that film a lot, as you can see from the rating. I don't think it's a movie for everyone, but those are the kind of movies that I'm really drawn to, hence why this has such a high score for me. I love any filmmaker that can set like a really disturbing, unsettling tone like that. Just felt like it was really masterfully done, and it's making me want to check out more of Ben Young's films.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Like, it's like we're enjoying this, we're like, this is amazing, man, such a good movie, 19 out of 20, people are going to watch this, those two need counseling like that. This is 19 out of 20. Have you seen Citizen Kane or some shit? Like, you know what I mean? Like, like, what the fuck, you're a messed up man. We liked it, whatever, but
totally.
Yeah, but that was Hounds of Love. I was like, before we wrap this up, do you want to just tell everyone where you can get you on the social medias and everything else? How do we get Careless Whispod?
Yeah, we're Careless Whispod on Instagram. And I think it's just facebook.com/Careless Whispod for Facebook, which is those two platforms are where we do most of the updates and stuff. To actually listen to us, mostly on Spotify. The format that we do right now, because we're playing music on there, we use Spotify's license to be able to play the music.
I wondered how you did that.
Yeah, so you can only hear those episodes on Spotify, and it's only paid subscribers that hear the whole songs. If you've got a free Spotify account, you can still hear us talk about it, and you'll get little snippets of the songs still, so you get a vibe, and then you can go check out the music on your own. But if you already have a Spotify account, you may as well check it out. If you enjoyed listening to us having a yarn about music, about movies here, you'll get the same thing.
Yeah, it's a great podcast.
Careless Whispod on Spotify. Some of the older episodes you can get pretty much anywhere you get your other podcasts.
But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. You're a legend.
Yeah, I had a great time. Thank you so much for having me on, Danny. You are
welcome.
Keep up the great work with the Creepy Crap podcast. I'm loving it.
Keep up your thing. I feel like you're like borderline about to get picked up by a radio station, I reckon. Like someone is going to be like, I love the format. These guys are great. It's hilarious.
We were joking that Triple M are probably going to sue us for our Whisper episode, actually.
Oh, yeah. Any publicity is good, right?
We'll see. Let the courts decide.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. Check out the Careless Whispod. The movie was Hounds of Love. This is the Creepy Crap Podcast. I was joined by Gary. Thank you again so much for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
It was amazing. Thank you, everyone. Catch you next week.